on the Enneagram. We will, again, over the next couple of weeks, let's see, we've got this week, next week. So let me just say, we'll wrap up our numbers today, and next week I'll tell you what we're going to do for the next few sessions as we talk a bit more about, we'll go into some more depth over the next few weeks. Anybody got any questions before we start on our eights and our nines? Eights and nines. Daryl ain't got no clue what he is either, so. All right. So, let's just jump straight to our number eight. As we come to the number eight, and let's see, does anybody have an extra? April, they may, you good? There may be one on the printer upstairs. I'll get you one. Okay. Let's move to the eight. As we move into the eight, we are back into the gut space. So we spent the last week and a little bit of the week before with our fives, sixes, and sevens in the mental space, in the head space, for people who think themselves into oblivion. Today, we are back into those who perfectly are capable of thinking, but they don't need to because their gut tells them what to do. They don't have to think it out. They know. And eights know in a way that is unique to them. Eights are the ones who need to be against. They are particularly come across as extraordinarily aggressive. They are always looking for a fight to pick. As children, eights reveled in being bad. They were the rebels. They were the ones who did what they were not supposed to do. Good girls go to heaven, bad girls go everywhere. Right? Yeah. Yeah. If you were into heavy metal, or whatever the version of heavy metal was, age appropriate, if you thought Ozzy Osbourne was awesome, or whoever, I'm aging myself with those. This is before Ozzy got soft and had a TV show about his family, okay? So, eights had a couple of different things as children that kind of pushed them in this direction. At an early age, they got the impression that the world punished weak people. And so if the world punishes the weak, then you must become strong. And so they developed a thick skin and an aggressive demeanor in order to keep the world at bay. They often had parents who rewarded strength over kindness. Some parents tell their kids, "I don't care if they hit you, you don't hit back." Other parents tell their children, "If you get hit, you better hit them back harder. You show them who's in charge. You teach them who's boss." That's a lot of eights. I'm not suggesting, I may be leaning that way, that that's a cycle of abuse, but please hear me, that is one eight. The other childhood that eights may have had was one of overindulgent parents. It swings to both spectrums. Parents who were too laissez-faire with their children often have children who are firm and rigid because they rebel against the laissez-faire nature of their parents. Which, as a parent, just tells you, you just can't do it right, okay? Just know, you're going to mess up. It's okay. If you had an eight as a child, basically it would not matter how you parented them. They were going to be an eight. Maybe. In adulthood, distinguishing, particularly in civilized adulthood, distinguishing between eights and ones can be difficult. They're both in the gut. They both know what needs to be done. They both have a strong feeling and a good idea about how others should do things as well. Eights rarely apologize. Ones will tell you they're sorry. Ones will admit, you know what, I shouldn't have. Eights rarely apologize. Unredeemed eights. Remember, we're talking about the unredeemed eight here. And the reason is because eights still are operating under the sense that to admit that you might have made a mistake is to admit weakness, and the world punishes weakness. And so you can't admit that you were wrong. Eights love conflict. And that can come across in a few different forms. Some of them love overt conflict. Some eights love drama. They will stir a pot like nobody's business. We talked last week about contraphobic sixes are the ones who take risks. Well, the difference is eights, and so contraphobic sixes often can come off as like they're against something, but contraphobic sixes are all always operating out of their head. Eights, they're just angry. They come across, they often come across as very angry people. And they're coming out of their gut. And the reason they also come out of their gut, and this is where we start to talk about some of the good things, is that they detest hypocrisy and injustice. They're already hardwired to be upset. And if you present them with something that is off-kilter, something that is wrong in the system, they will be the ones to fight against it. And both a good and bad thing. I mean, eights are angry and they're ready to fight, but eights will often fight for the underdog. They love the underdog. Eights, and you see this in a lot of relationships. If eights see someone as weak, or if they see someone as, let's just say weak, let's use that general term for now. Eights will defend and fight on behalf of the weak. But if eights see someone who challenges their power, they will be against that. Because eights strive on power. What we don't see in eights very often, and it is true though, eights come across as extraordinarily harsh. What we don't see, however, is that we do see that part, by the way. You can pick them out, okay? If you're around people enough, you can pick out the eights. What we don't see, however, is that eights are extraordinarily hard on themselves. They are their own harshest critic. They punish themselves internally. Eights experience life as hostile. It's threatening. And unless you can prove otherwise, that's where they operate from. But beneath that, eights have a very strong and well-hidden inner child. They are extraordinarily sweet, but they have developed years and years and years of a shell that has to be broken in order for the inner child to thrive. One of the things you need to know if you are in a system with an eight, and this is crucial, you need to keep it in mind, because you are, everybody's in a system with an eight in some capacity. Eights use conflict as a means of connection. Okay? You can. I mean, you can see them in children. I mean, you know, one of the things we say about the Enneagram, and I joke about this a lot, and I said I'll help some of you find your numbers when we're done. I won't tell you. It's not, like, I'll give you some examples of people who are, but by and large, and I'll tell you about people who, characterize. It's best if people discover their own, but the trick is most people can't really know their own number until they have failed enough. And so most people don't get it until they're 30-ish or older, unless they've suffered a lot. And children, though, you could look at them and be like, well, that kid really seems like an 8. I wouldn't tell them. But if you're looking for an example in your head, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I talk about this before, and I mean, I'm fascinated by all this stuff, so we could talk about it a lot, but we are all a product of some combination of nature and nurture, right? We're all wired a certain way. Let's see, let me make sure I'm not making this up. Okay, so we only have two siblings in here at the moment, right? Because your sister's not in here. Donna's sister's not in here right now, so we'll just talk about you two siblings, okay? These two siblings right here, all right? So this is Kathy and Joyce, her sister, very close in age, right? I mean, so generationally in the same category, are you two a lot alike? Ah, it's a yes and a no, right? And it has very little to do with the nurture, a little bit. Because I don't care. Every child is loved and every child is the same. Man, no, yes. But you can love both of your children equally and treat them differently. Not bad, but differently. Okay, so that's one thing. I'm an only child. So birth order, family system dynamics, and nature all play a role in how we behave. And so one of the reasons we say you can't do it till you're older, I'm trying to answer that question. You can look at a kid, and I can look at my kids, and I can tell you what I think they are. But it is always difficult to determine the energy that drives someone who is not yourself. Heck, it's very difficult sometimes to determine the energy that drives you. Until you grow up enough and have failed enough to go, oh, that is why I am doing what I am doing. Eights in particular struggle with that, by the way, because they don't want to turn inward. They do not want to turn toward that soft inner child. They want to avoid that tenderness. Eights are great revolutionaries, by the way, because they are very comfortable working outside the system. They are not as good of reformers, because the difference is reformers are very good with working inside the system. Eights can't take it. They got to get out and change it from the outside. The temptation of the eight is a constant struggle for justice. And the temptation in that is that they make themselves arbiter of what is just. And by the way, even the best among us have a fairly flawed view of what is just. Our objectivity is off the charts below most of the time. Eights are exceptionally good at denial. It is their defense mechanism. They're just phenomenal. If you do not fit into their concept of justice, they're great. You don't even exist. Because for you to exist and for them to struggle against you would be to give you power in their system. So they just deny it. Eights avoid vulnerability like the plague. Everybody avoids vulnerability to some degree. Eights avoid it like the minute they show you their tenderness, they will bleed out. The root sin of eights is shamelessness. In the classic sins, this is lust. Now, when we think about lust in our culture, we think about lust as always being sexual in nature. But lust for power is the sin of the eight. It can be sexual. It could also be any time you subjugate or abuse another person for the benefit of the self is a lust-filled impulse. And that is where the eight is coming from. Conan the Carkerer. I'm not sure what that is. It's part conqueror, part cartographer. He made some maps of all the territories he took over. It's either in Conan the Barbarian or Conan the Gosh. I'll be doing it in Swedish today. Berg de Burr. The Conan the Barbarian or Conan the Conqueror. There's a great line about his goal in life is to see his enemies flee before his... I mean, it's just this horror. That's a very eight impulse. I'm going to conquer and dominate it all. And that is a shameless impulse. It goes back to that whole, you better not say you're sorry because it might look like you're wrong. The pitfall for eights is related to their temptation, which is this justice thing. Eights are very tempted by revenge or vengeance. When we were in Turkey this summer, my nephew, who is kind of my spirit animal among our family, we were in this shop full of glass things, and I was telling him not to touch it, and he looked at me, and he touched a thing. So I reached over, and I thumped him. And I thumped him way harder than I meant to, and I thumped him right in the ribs. And he is a bull of a kid. I mean, he's just strong, and he's the middle child, but he is the one who will conquer them all. He just starts crying. And I'm like, oh, buddy, it's cool, man. You can hit me back. And he goes, vengeance belongs to God. So, not for the eight, though. If he'd been an eight and I had raised my and put some sort of tender underbelly right here, I mean, he would have just jacked me. Get this, though. This is how our wound is also our place of healing. This is what we talk about in the Enneagram. Your number is your blindness and is also your unique, powerful vision. For eight, redeemed eights are some of the most powerful people in the world. They're phenomenal leaders. Redeemed eights project and inhabit an innocence that is so powerful. MLK Jr. was probably an eight. If you think about, I have a dream, he is painting a picture that is improbable and hopeful and powerful. Now, if you study MLK Jr., you know he is not always the person that we make him out to be. He's a much more complicated figure, which would explain being an eight. He's a very complex, but in his redeemed moments, that vision of a hopeful future and seeking to change a system, that's a very powerful eight quality. They can be extraordinarily innocent and lovers of all of life. They can just embrace life like nobody's business because they've dealt with their anger and they've gotten through that being against. And once you get done being against, you find that you can be exceptionally for. It makes them powerful people. Sure. I mean, you might categorize them as having oppositional defiant disorder. They do not like authority. But that could also be, this is where it gets tricky with kids. It could just be being a kid, right? I mean, testing boundaries. Once you get over being against, you can be exceptionally for. In order for eights to move towards redemption, they have to embrace weakness and sincerity. which if you're an 8 and you hear that, you hate it. It's okay. Get over it. Symbols of 8s are rhinoceroses. They just duck that head and go. Rattlesnakes, tigers, bull, very aggressive animals. The nation for 8s is typically seen as Spain. It is the country of bullfighting. It is the country of machismo. If some of the numbers are really in touch with their feminine energy, 8s are typically read as abundantly masculine. You know, they carry themselves large. The colors of 8 are twofold. They are black and white because there is no gray for the 8. Biblical examples of the 8s, Samson, Saul, the first king of Israel, David was probably an 8. If you think about the moments of David's life where Bathsheba is a story of power, abused power. And he denies that he's the one who does it until he's confronted by Nathan. Hemingway, definitely an 8. Into manly things and tortured himself to death. So for 8s, the invitation towards maturation and conversion is mercy. 8s have to find mercy, starting for themselves. Because until you can be merciful to yourself, you cannot be merciful to others. And that begins with God. Until you can accept the mercy of God, you cannot extend mercy towards others. 8s, I think everybody ought to have some time in therapy. I've said that before. I will say it again. Therapy is good for the soul and the head, depending on where you're coming from. But 8s are the least likely to go to therapy and the most likely to need it. Because they don't want to look inside, because inside is soft. And sometimes a good therapist who will just sit there quietly while you ramble out your excuses is exactly what an 8 needs. And will ask the one or two questions that will send your walls tumbling down. If you're doing therapy, meditation, contemplation, anything that turns inward is very difficult for 8s and is part of their path of growing up. The 8 also really does need to get in touch with their feminine energy. If you are an 8, you need to do something that is creative and artistic and is typically, you know, described as something of a feminine quality. Man, get into, I think 8s, Herschel Walker, is that who took ballet? He took it for flexibility, but that's kind of the movement 8s need to make. Herschel Walker was a big football player, and he was both very popular, and he was large, okay? And he got into ballet. And people laughed about it, but it gave him longevity in his playing career because it increased strength and flexibility. 8s need to make the same movement. If I was working with an 8 and they were having a difficult time, I would say, hey, maybe we should take a flower arranging class together. Because they need to get in touch with the delicate. The lifetime task for 8 is probably something we ought to all be asking ourselves, but that is, they need to question the role of power in their lives. All of us have a certain relationship to power. 8s really need to focus on that. Let's move on to 9s briefly. We'll take questions at the end, but let me do just say this about 9s, and I know we have many 9s in this congregation. We have a few at least. In some ways, 9s are the hardest to talk about because they are the least confrontational, okay? They're just kind of, you know. In fact, even the sources that I have read, but two of the books I looked at, the chapters on 9s are shorter than chapters on the rest of them. Here's the irony. Nines as children often felt overlooked, and the chapters in the books about them are shorter. Nines as kids often had parents whose demands outweighed the needs of their children. They, have you ever seen the movie Best in Show? About, it's about competitive dog breeding. It's a mockumentary. If you don't know what that is, there's a whole category of movies about taking like kind of niche aspects of life and digging very deep into them and finding the humor in them. It's about people, and there are I know a girl in real life whose mom raises, some tiny dog and takes them all over the country to have them compete against other tiny fluffy dogs. She will fly her dogs all over the country, but she will not fly to see her daughter. The needs of the parents of nines often over... And that's in a pretty healthy system, by the way. In unhealthy systems, it can become a lot more dangerous. The other aspect, and if you notice, in a lot of the... When we talk about childhood, I'm talking about home life a lot. And if you'll notice, there's often like kind of these two polarities that people develop have. Children who are nines may have also had extremely conflict-filled home lives, because nines are peacemakers. Everybody likes to be around nines because nines are very non-threatening. Nines are peaceful. Nines help people be themselves. They put people at ease. They're just very open. Nines as adults are very good at making peace. They're exceptionally good at seeing multiple sides of a situation and helping others get along. They are, but the downside of that is nines often have a horribly hard time finding themselves because they are so focused on helping everybody else. Not like twos. They don't need it in the same way that twos do. Twos are coming out of the heart and they're crushed if not everybody gets along. Nines, they see that a harmonious system is better for everyone, and they feel from the gut. Wouldn't it be great if we just all got along? Nines are typically described in adults they can come across as lazy. They can read as lazy. It's just that they are so concerned with everybody else's impulses and drives that they don't possess, without work, their own. They don't have this, the eight is like out to punch everybody in the face. And the nine is out to make sure that people's faces don't get punched. One of those is looking out for the other and so gets lost. But when nines move towards redemption, they become some of the most powerful truth speakers in the world because they are not anxious about, it's not about them. They're just speaking the truth because it's the truth. Their ego is not wrapped up in it. Nines are also often described as, I don't know if I put this in the notes because it's kind of a hard concept to explain, but so nines, the energy of nines, and we'll talk about this in The Nation, if you think about societies before they were colonized, okay? So native societies, which typically lived in much greater harmony before they were colonized or conquered or before the empire had its way with them. If you go back and you read historical accounts of how certain people perceived, and particularly if you're talking about native people and the influx of Anglo populations on them, there are these great dialogues where you see these native speakers talking about, why are these folks so worried about time? They talk so much about having no time that they have no time. Whereas the native does the thing that needs to be done, is present in the moment, experiences the avocado, and goes on with life. Right? The nine is able to embody fullness and joy. They're very joy-filled people because they are able to be in the moment. They're not hampered by this rush of time. That image often gets portrayed as, well, we'll get to that in a second. Because nines are so focused on meeting the needs of others, they often have a hard time being true and kind to themselves. And so the temptation for nines is to belittle themselves, to think of themselves as having little worth. And if you grew up in a system where your parents' or sibling needs were higher than yours, it's very hard to become an adult who believes your needs have merit. Nines are very good at numbing themselves. That's a little slow, isn't it? They are, nines have to be very careful not to numb themselves or engage in narcosis, becoming ones who escape often through alcohol or drugs or whatever. Sometimes there could be nines who escape through exercise. It's the opposite kind of addiction. You know, they get that runner's high. Calvin's looking at me, man. Calvin's a nine. He'll tell you that. But Calvin is a nine obsessed with time, so it makes him a really odd duck. All right. Since we will pick up next week, I'm just going to stop there. Any questions for like 2 minutes? We will pick up with nines again next week. I don't want them to feel like